This is Slashdot Review for Monday, November 15th, 2004. My name's Andy McCaskey, and this is a 10-minute summary of highlights from recent contributions to Slashdot. Today's music's from GarageBand.com and Creative Commons artist, the Tom Tiggy Band from Windsor, Ontario. Now on to the headlines. One of the lead items on Slashdot that you may have heard on the major media concerns RFID labels going on to prescription drug bottles. Sonic One writes the New York Times is reporting that the Food and Drug Administration and several major drug makers are expected to announce an agreement Monday to put tiny radio antennas on the labels of millions of medicine bottles to combat counterfeiting and fraud. RFID labels provide a unique identifier that's almost impossible to copy. When pharmacists receive delivery, they should be able to pass a wand over the bottles and through an online database check the history of each. Each label costs between 20 and 50 cents. Solaris 10 has been released, it's updated, and it's free, as in free speech. SIBO writes that Aces Hardware and News.com report Solaris 10 has been released. Improvements include a performance-enhanced TCP/IP stack to shed the Slolaris moniker and their much-vaunted Z-File system, ZFS. Solaris will initially be free, as in beer, with an annual subscription fee for bug fixes and support. As well, King Skippus writes that MSNBC is reporting that after investing roughly $500 million, spending years of development time on its next-generation operating system, Sun Microsystems on Monday will announce an aggressive price for the software, namely free. Sun has also promised to make the underlying code of Solaris available under an open-source license, although the details have not been released. HackJandy writes into Slashdot that when Intel's Centrino platform was first unveiled, industry experts were surprised to see such great performance out of the Pentium M based off of Intel's P6 or Pentium 3 architecture. According to sources in the industry, Intel's officially adopted the approach to migrate Pentium M to the desktop in a program called East Fork to offset some of its Pentium 4 processor sales. Cheaper, slower, cooler, but higher-performing processors are on the way to an Intel desktop near you. The core for Fedora 3 has been released, and the question is it worth the upgrade? Chris writes in that with the new features such as SE Linux, GNOME 2.8, KDE 3.3, Evolution 2.0, Remote Desktop, Helix Player, and of course Firefox, it may well be worth your while to make the switch. At OS Dir, the screenshot tour of Fedora Core 3 takes you through boot, installation, desktop, taskbar, menus, configuration, and the new features of this new release. In addition, Core 3 screenshot tours take you through test 1, 2, and 3, and now the final release. You can check it out through links on Slashdot. Hardcore Linux fans might be interested in the Gen 2 Linux release 2004.3. Dreadlord writes to Slashdot that Gen 2 has released 2004.3 for x86, AMD 64, HPPA, PPC, Spark, and an initial release for PPC 64. You can read the information page, change long, go straight to the mirrors, or even better, use the torrents. DownhillBattle.org is offering a bounty for peer-to-peer game plug-in. The Combat Wombat music activism site DownhillBattle.org has started a fund to pay a bounty on a peer-to-peer plug-in for game. With new laws threatening peer-to-peer, Downhill Battle thinks this is the future. Regardless, it's an interesting funding of open source. Some tech giants are bankrolling an IP hoarding startup, and that's IP for intellectual property. TheoDP writes that Microsoft alum Nathan Meyerhold is so strongly believing that intellectual property is the next software that he's studying for the patent bar exam. His new company, Intellectual Ventures, doesn't actually make anything, only patent attorneys roam the hallways. Meyerhold isn't the only true believer. Microsoft, Intel, Sony, Nokia, Apple, Google, and eBay have contributed to a $350 million bankroll, which the firm is using to buy up existing patents that can be rented to companies who want to produce real products. If you'd like to comment on a Slashdot item or suggest a Creative Commons artist or band to feature for listeners on Slashdot Review, all you need to do is make a phone call to 732-357-3682 or place a network-based SIP phone call to 747-667-3306. Or you can leave a written comment at slashdotreview.com. There's something brewing over peer-to-peer advertising. Kenny Miller writes that the BBC News Online is reporting that advertisers are starting to place ads on peer-to-peer networks because they're basically so popular. But the owners of paid-for download services are accusing them of providing oxygen for companies that support illegal download. So there's a row brewing over peer-to-peer. The city of Atlantis has been found. Again. Two Freeists writes that Paul McCartney and Mythic can eat their hearts out because BBC News has an interesting revelation regarding the lost city of Atlantis. Quote, American researchers claim to have found convincing evidence that locates the site of the lost kingdom of Atlantis off the coast of Cyprus. Tufrist has an idea. The idea of an almost mythical lost civilization is a common thread throughout all old human societies, much like really big floods. Maybe there could be more than one story that fits, but unfortunately that wouldn't be a simplistic enough answer to be soundbitten into oblivion. Bulldozer 2003 writes in with the headline, finally, something both nerdy and sexy that engineers can do. It's called a do-it-yourself lead illuminated sleep chamber. Sounds like an oxymoron, but this fellow took a cue from the Vospad, decked out his own dorm room bed with light-emitting diodes. They're fully adjustable, allowing me to create every color of the rainbow. Total cost, according to the email, is around $25. The LEDs cost about a quarter a piece in bulk. The potentiometers cost about $6 a piece from DigiKey. Then he combined that with an LM317 voltage regulator as a free sample from TI and points out that lots of companies will ship you free samples, and therefore it's a good deal for college students. Sounds like a college student with way too much time on his hands. Whether you are a newbie or what might politely be called an old fogey, the introduction into encryption link that's posted on Slashdot will be worthwhile. An anonymous reader submitted a Tech World story, sort of a encryption primer. The differences between codes and ciphers, what all those acronyms like RSA and DES actually mean. It's a good primer for newbies and a good refresher for the old fogies. Slashdot has links to an interview with Red Hat VP Michael Timon. David Ross writes that an interview with Red Hat's Vice President Michael Timon has just been posted on linuxquestions.org. His responses in the interview show that Red Hat's community project Fedora has a bright future. Quote, the project's been incredibly successful. We've got a lot of people outside of Red Hat to thank for that. What Red Hat must now do to finish the job of making Fedora a true community project is publishing and getting accepted a governance model. And inquiring minds do want to know, what's the connection between Microsoft and SCO? Rocket Jam writes, CNET's running a long question and answer format article which takes an in-depth look at the relationship between Microsoft and SCO and the financial support that SCO's been receiving both directly and indirectly from Microsoft and their ongoing litigation alleging that Linux violates the intellectual property rights they claim to hold on Unix. The article details the money that Microsoft has paid to SCO to license Unix, as well as the role that they played in Baystar's $50 million investment in SCO in late 2003. Microsoft paid SCO $16.6 million for a Unix license. The only other company that's come close to paying SCO that amount of money for a license is Sun, who paid $9.3 million to license Unix for their Solaris operating system. The headline on the article is Music Man. Hellspam writes that MacNet V2 interviewed a man who claims to be the king of the pirates. The man has over 900,000 songs, a collection that rivals even the iTunes music store. From the article, quote, I spent the day with a guy who spends every free moment collecting music. So far, his music collection rivals Apple's iTunes music store, and his goal is to own a copy of every song ever recorded. Can he do it? Well, maybe. But you know what they say, it's the journey, not the destination. Quick glance back into some key articles yesterday. There was an introduction to the millionaire spammer Jeremy James. Presta Alex writes that the Associated Press has profiled Jeremy James, who's been charged with sending out unsolicited email messages and who just got a 9-year jail term recommendation from the state jury in Virginia. With the help of 16 high-speed lines, T1s, James could send out 10 million emails a day. His best month in terms of gross income netted him $750,000. According to the article, in a typical month, James might receive 10,000 to 17,000 credit card orders, thus making money on perhaps only one of every 30,000 emails that he sent out. But he earned $40 a pop, and the undertaking was so vast that James could still pull in $400,000 to $750,000 a month while spending perhaps $50,000 on bandwidth and other overhead. McGuire said, when you're marketing to the world, there's enough idiots out there who will be suckered in. And that's it for Slashdot Review for Monday, November 15, 2004. My name's Andy McCaskey. I have no affiliation with Slashdot other than as a regular reader and offer this material and other items of interest under the Creative Commons Attribution Share-Alike license, as detailed on slashdotreview.com. Slashdot Review Audio is published Monday through Friday, occasionally on Sundays. Today's featured album track is from the GarageBand.com artist The Tom Tiggy Band, featuring Chantel Thorne on lead vocals. More music from this artist at GarageBand.com, following the links on Slashdot Review.